the FDA prepares to greenlight vaccines for more teenagers as fears of a new COVID variant spread. And in Asia, countries pause plans to ease their pandemic restrictions.
So far, these moves that we've seen seem to be more of a preemptive moves rather than moves to contain any rapid spread of Omicron in the region.
And the U.S. is short on coal as winter nears. It's Tuesday, November 30th. I'm Peter Granitz with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Sources say the Food and Drug Administration is racing to authorize Pfizer and BioNTech booster shots for 16 and 17-year-olds. It could do so as early as next week. So far, only 18-year-olds are eligible for COVID-19 booster shots. Vaccine makers are assessing whether their current shots work as well against the Omicron variant. Still, the CDC recommended Monday that all adults get a booster. The Federal Trade Commission has asked Amazon, Procter & Gamble, Walmart, and others for information on how they're handling supply chain backups. It's part of a study into whether the snarls have led to anti-competitive behavior. The FTC's order requires the companies to detail how the supply chain crisis has led to increased prices. A spokesman for supply chain servicer McLean said the company will cooperate with the FTC, while P&G declined to comment. We're exclusively reporting that SoftBank is investing $150 million in a Korean metaverse platform. Zepeto has about 2 million daily users, and its parent company reports that 70% of them are female and between the ages of 13 and 24. The platform sells digital fashion items for users' avatars, with high-end brands like Gucci, Dior, and Ralph Lauren typically costing just a few dollars. SoftBank's move comes as tech giants like Facebook and Microsoft are investing billions of dollars into metaverse products. And the Caribbean nation of Barbados is officially a republic after it dropped the Queen of England as its head of state. Sandra Mason was sworn in as president early Tuesday morning. She says the move is a break from the colonial past.
For present and future generations, we stand on and claim our traditions, heritage, and patrimony earned by the sweat of Bajan brows and inherited from our forefathers.
Parliament last month elected Mason as its first ever president, capping the decades-long push to become a republic. U.S. power plants are short on coal, so short their inventories are the smallest they've been since the Nixon years. And as power providers rush to stock up ahead of the cold season, you guessed it, the price is shooting right up. We have with us market reporter Joe Wallace to tell us what's going on. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Just how low are the stockpiles right now?
Well, as you say, inventories in the U.S. power sector haven't been this low since the 1970s. Stockpiles are about two-thirds of the five-year average for this time of year. And just as one example, at PJM, which runs the electricity grid for 13 eastern states and the District of Columbia, supplies are so low that the company has taken action to conserve coal for the coldest days this winter. It said that until April, it would allow steam plants to shut down if they reached less than 10 days worth of coal on hand.
Why is there so little of it right now?
Well, in the long run, coal's market share and production of coal have really declined since frackers of oil and gas flooded the market with cheap natural gas a decade ago. And more recently, you know, the cost of producing renewable energy has fallen, and that's led to a greater share of renewables in the electricity mix. And as coal has lost market share to natural gas and wind farms and solar farms over the past decade, financing for speculative production of coal, the kind that, you know, could lead power generators to buy in the spot market, has really dried up. So miners sell most of their output in advance. And then in the short run, there are snarl ups at ports and railways, so it would be difficult to deliver coal even if there was more coming on out of the mines.
If coal has lost so much market share, how big of a deal is this actually?
Well, as you say, you know, natural gas overtook coal as the top power generation fuel 5 years ago. And in 2019, the US actually consumed more renewable energy than coal for the first time since 1885, when wood was the coal's main competitor. And the US power sector has retired about a third of its coal-fired generating capacity since 2010. And there are even more closures planned. So coal isn't what it once was, but it does still remain an important source of power in the US, and in particular, it serves as a swing fuel, which can complement other sources of power when, for example, the wind doesn't blow or the sun doesn't shine and output from renewables flickers, or when natural gas prices are very high, as they are right now.
Joe, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Peter.
That's Joe Wallace. He's a markets reporter. And coming up, countries in Asia had been easing some of their most restrictive COVID policies. Then came Omicron. More on how countries are tackling the new variant. That's after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Plus, save time by completing security questionnaires with Vanta AI. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ. That's VANTA.com/WSJ.
To state the obvious, there is never going to be a good time for a new COVID variant to emerge. The discovery of Omicron comes at a particularly unfortunate time in Asia, where several countries had only recently started to ease pandemic restrictions. That's not happening anymore. Today, Japan will close its borders to foreigners until the end of the year. Australia paused plans to allow students and skilled migrants to enter, and other countries are taking even more measures. To learn about what's being done to control the spread in Asia, we are joined by Natasha Khan. She's a reporter based in Hong Kong. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Some of these steps seem quite severe. So tell us, how widespread is the new variant across Asia right now?
So far, these moves that we've seen seem to be more of a preemptive moves rather than moves to contain any rapid spread of Omicron in the region. As of Monday night, we've seen at least 3 cases in Hong Kong and 5 in Australia. Though the situation across the region is still developing as countries move to look into confirmed cases and the variants of those cases. Although it's possible that in the coming days we'll see more cases as countries move to sequence known cases in their respective countries.
Is there a sense that these restrictions are appropriate?
I think right now, as you know, there's just been so many fast developments over the last few days. And given that we're almost 2 years into this pandemic, it seems that many countries are adopting the strategy of being better safe than sorry. So the developments over the last 2 days in Asia in terms of the pause of reopening plans seem to really be a response to a fear of a wider spread of this variant, which we're still really trying to find out what the potential dangers can be.
What's the risk?
I think in terms of the risk, obviously, throughout this whole pandemic, countries around the world have been grappling with the best sort of puzzle of, you know, figuring out the puzzle of how to balance economic costs with the spread of the virus. And obviously, in the last few weeks, we've seen several countries in the region, which had been closed off to the world for such a long time, really begin to open up. And so the developments of the last few days have really been, I guess, disappointing for some people. For example, Australia was supposed to have its next phase of reopening on Wednesday, and now that's going to be delayed for 2 weeks. So I guess the risk is that this is just an ongoing weight on the economy, on more open borders. At the same time, I think after so many different waves of the virus around the world, I think many leaders are just unwilling to take the risk of not doing anything, given that the alarm was sounded quite quickly in this instance, which allowed countries to take action to try to slow outbreaks of the Omicron variant in their countries.
Are some countries going to be more affected by the return of these rules than others?
I would say, obviously, this is still a developing story, so it's hard to tell whether these measures really are temporary or if they will linger for longer, as you know, we've seen obviously in the last 2 years, sometimes the expectation and the reality, there's been some discrepancy there. At the same time, I suppose maybe I would say in this part of the world, there have been just so many months where these conditions of sort of closed borders, tougher entry requirements have been enforced that perhaps the disruption might not be as stark as it might be in some other places in the world. When we're considering countries like Indonesia and Thailand, which had just in recent weeks really been starting to open up again to tourism, hoping for those tourism dollars, which are integral parts of their economy, that is a concern because for Indonesia's case, in response to this new variant, they've now extended the quarantine time for all foreign travelers from 3 days to a week.
Of course, there's China, which is where COVID-19 was first detected. Its borders have been shut for basically the duration of the pandemic. Is China better suited to ride out this new variant right now than the other countries in Asia?
Oh, I would say definitely China is really well placed to ride out the emergence of this new variant, given that it's already been adopting extremely strict border controls for the most part of the pandemic. In recent weeks, there was a outbreak of the Delta variant in multiple provinces in China, and the country has really been going to extreme lengths to contain these outbreaks, including, you know, lockdowns of neighborhoods or extensive contact tracing. And given that they have such a extensive system to track and try to contain outbreaks, I think that China's quite well placed with the emergence of this new variant, given that it's really one of the only, it really is the only major economy that's still adopting a zero tolerance for COVID approach. I think China's mechanism is quite strong and has quite a lot of tools in its toolbox to tackle this outbreak.
Natasha Khan is a reporter based in Hong Kong. Thanks for your time.
Great. Thank you so much.
And finally, the story of an entire country that learned to love movie popcorn without the movie. During the pandemic, South Korea restricted filmgoers from eating popcorn in the theater. But as reporter Dossal Yoon says, those rules could not stop the masses from getting their hands covered in butter and salt.
Movie lovers had to give up eating popcorn inside theaters, but that doesn't mean they had to give up popcorn altogether. People came up with creative ways, such as arriving early to eat popcorn in the lobby, and some people even just came by to buy popcorn, skipping the movie altogether. Theaters lost roughly 70% of their customers because of social distancing rules. Some people thought there was no point to watching a movie if they couldn't eat popcorn, but instead the popcorn delivery market thrived and people even came for takeout popcorn.
Good news! South Korea has now eased that restriction, but as we heard from Natasha earlier, some rules are coming back into force. Here's hoping. And that's what's news for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Peter Granitz with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.